Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
As a nation, we need to see how we can benefit from sustainable energy or reliable energy. And several energy projects, especially rural electrification projects, were started by the previous government of the APC.
The spokesperson for the main opposition in Sierra Leone's parliament calls on the government to not abandon projects of the former administration.
In conformity with the statutes of the party and given their satisfaction with the record of the party, they believe that the national president should continue to be the candidate for the elections coming up next year.
The ruling Cameroonian People's Democratic Movement overwhelmingly backs President Paul Biya to be the party's presidential candidate in next year's election.
Uganda has not had a single marathon that is certified by World Athletics Federation. Uganda is one of the top three running nations in Africa, especially long distance. What this marathon has done after the certification by World Athletics Federation, it gives Ugandans a chance to qualify for any marathon in the world.
And Uganda's Minister of Tourism calls for support of the Rwenzori Marathon taking place in Kasese on Saturday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Sierra Leone, the spokesperson for the main opposition in parliament is calling on the government to not abandon projects of the former administration. Parliamentarian Umfa Sori Koroma expressed concern that it appears the current administration is delaying the full implementation of the rural electrification effort started by former President Ernest Bai Koroma. This after calling for the expansion of electricity to all rural areas during a parliamentary debate. Umfa Sori Koroma tells me that access to electricity is fundamental to the social and economic development of any country, including Sierra Leone.
Far too long, we as a nation have been grappling with challenges concerning electricity. Of course, we in the city, the western area, even main towns like Bolton, Kenema, Makeni are struggling with sustainable electricity or even reliable electricity. So for rural communities, my statement was those communities, unfortunately, have people that were born in those communities and they grew up in those communities. And unfortunately, we even die in those communities without even seeing a light bulb. And it's unfortunate. So as a nation, we need to see how we can benefit from sustainable energy or reliable energy. And several energy projects, especially rural electrification projects, were started by the previous government of the APC. But what we realize now is because of lack of subsidy from government or high taxes from government, those communities have even returned some of their meters because they could not afford the electricity that is given to them.
How long has this problem of rural electrification or lack thereof persisted in Sierra Leone?
That has been all pretty much all of our lives since independence, since 1961. But like I stated, the previous government had initiatives to see how communities and even major townships in the country could become electrified. Let's remember when the former president, Ernest Bai Koroma, Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma, became president, he declared that he will electrify or bring electricity in the city Freetown in 100 days, which he did. So based on that boldness and that audacity, his government ensured that electricity stayed policy, became a relevant part of his policy throughout his 10 and a half years in governance. And I believe that was the direction that even international and donor partners saw and started funding projects to electrify rural communities.
Mr. Koroma, is there a convergence of ideas that the rural folks must get electricity from both your party, the APC, as well as the government, SLPP, in parliament?
So I would like to believe so, and I would like to say so, because I don't believe there are contrary views to that of why they should or shouldn't. Any well-meaning Swellenian should believe that electricity should become a mainstay. Every well-meaning Swellenian should believe and know that once electricity becomes a mainstay, even the country will be open to foreign direct investment, because energy sufficiency is one of the developmental tools that any given country can benefit from. So as a nation, and as we are seeing the ability or the potential for Sierra Leone to even benefit from MCC funds, in which this government have declared that they want to put it towards energy, we want to see how that those funds could not only be used for the distribution of electricity, but how we can ensure that we become more energy sufficient.
I asked you that question because some of your critics are saying you were just playing politics in the world of parliament, because your party was in power for 10 consecutive years and did not complete the rural electrification project.
Well, clearly, my statement in parliament on that day was a caution to the commissioner to see how he can become more proactive and develop or garner more innovative approach in his office. Clearly, our energy challenges is not a new thing, but clearly strides towards energy sufficiency be started during our party, during the presidency of Ernest Bai Koroma. That is clear. So we cannot distance ourselves from that, and we cannot in any way talk about energy without giving praises to the former president for what he did in the energy sector. Now, moving forward, all of us as a nation need to come together to see how we can work in that direction. And our role as representatives of the people is to remind the central government, which is the executive arm of government, in their policies and how they can direct their policies.
Mfasori Koroma is the spokesperson for Sierra Leone's main opposition APC in parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. In Ghana, the president of the Gadangbe Alliance for Change says the movement plans to put pressure on the presidential candidates to ensure the development of urban communities. Dr. Ishmael Nidodu served as a senior official in the executive of the UN Secretary General and coordinated the implementation of the UN Sahel strategy. His comments come as Ghanaians go to the polls in December to choose a new president, parliament, and local representatives. The Gadangbe Alliance for Change is a social movement supporting the transformation of urban communities of the Gadangbe people on the coast of the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Nidodu, who has over 25 years of experience in African development, talks to me about what's at stake in the coming elections.
Ghana's election 2024, in my view, is one of the most consequential elections that the country is undertaking. A number of reasons for this. The first is the fact that when you look at all the candidates that have been associated with politics since 1992, when the constitution was formed, in addition to some of those who are still in government, what you will find is that there have been a lot of reach out. Most of them are either old, are beginning to leave office, and there are a lot of parliamentarians that will not contest again. So the second is the kind of conversations that are coming through in terms of where we want to see the country going. And these conversations are very, very critical in the sense that it begins to give an indication of where Ghanaians are leaning in terms of their aspirations for the country since independence 1957.
You are the president of the Gadangbe Alliance for Change. You are the brain behind it. Tell me, what inspired you to form this movement and what your vision is for this group?
So the Gadangbe Alliance for Change is a movement, and what it's seeking to do is, number one, is to leverage current politics to establish a very clear social contract with whoever wins the election in 2024 and to demand a few things. The first is an establishment of a deliberate Gadangbe Development Authority that will provide development planning imperatives for Gadangbe people in terms of the schools, the quality of schools they need to have, addressing the issue of illiteracy, addressing the issue of skills and human capital of of the Gandame people, majority of them could be engaged in what I call the vocational skills. We also want to use that occasion to really look at the real assets and how to turn the assets for Gandame people. There are many of the lands that have been leased to government, leased to other commercial centers, which have not paid, the lease have not been paid, the rents have not been paid, the taxes are not being paid. And so, you know, when you invest in Gandame people that form the human capital that will stimulate these GDP growth, then the country will be growing. And this is why we are very, very enthused about this. And we will leverage politics. What we'll do is to do a block voting to now we consider the NDC, John Mahama, and on the basis of that, establish a social contract.
As somebody who has worked with the UN for years and years and years, geopolitically speaking, where do you think Africa is going from here?
Thank you. This is a very good question, and it's one that needs serious and critical reflection. Let me start from the terrorism situation in the Sahel today, and because it is you know that a political situation that has created that is at the center of the geopolitics in Africa today. So when you look at the terrorism situation in the Sahel region and also in the Somalis and so on, all of them are driven by what people believe is now external forces, and there's a divide between the conservative, colonialists or imperialists that we have known before, in the European Union and to some extent, and now the bigger force of the United States and all the allies associated with that European Union, and so is the China and Russia, and Africa seems to be in between these, and therefore the question then is if you are not supporting China and Russia against the issues in Ukraine, then you probably should be aligning to one force or the other. And if you are engaging China for your economic diplomacy or Russia for your economic diplomacy, then you have challenges with engaging United States and the European Union and the UK and the like. And I think it's a very unfortunate situation that we find ourselves. What would be very useful for African continent to focus on is to really think about what is the imperative for the continent. Peace and security is extremely important. We have to look at how we, and from my experience, that we have to necessarily invest in our security sector, that they have the type of capacity and the type of skills and the type of intelligentsia that is required for them to be able to deal with the ongoing threats coming from violent extremism and terrorist acts.
Dr. Ishmael Nidodu is the president of the Gandame Alliance for Change. He spoke with me from New York. A leading member of the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM, says incumbent President Paul Biya received overwhelming support to be the party's presidential candidate in next year's election. Professor Elvis Ngule, coordinator of academia for the ruling CPDM, also dismissed accusations that the governing party uses its power of incumbency to create a biased terrain that ensures its victory in the polls. His remarks come after the CPDM confirmed the 91-year-old leader as its presidential candidate. Critics say Biya is too old and lacks the energy to effectively manage the affairs of the Central African country. Professor Elvis Ngule tells me that the choice of the president meets all constitutional requirements of a presidential candidate.
The national president of the CPDM is, by statute and by the constitution of the party, the candidate for the presidential election anytime the presidential election holds. That is what the statute says. That is what we go by. So on the basis of that statute, as far as we the militants are concerned, the militants in all the 377 within the country and 17 sections abroad, the militants say that in conformity with the statutes of the party and given their satisfaction with the record of the party, they believe that the national president should continue to be the candidate for the elections coming up next year. That is a matter of law, statute, constitution, and the wishes, the overwhelming wishes of the militants of the party.
Professor Angola, what do you think the president's realistic chances are to win re-election?
Well, the realistic chances of the president are good to win the election. I say this because of the following. One, the militants are united and they are together. The party is not divided. The party is united. The party is a bloc. The second factor that justifies or explains what I'm saying is that the country itself is a country which where there's stability, relatively, where there's peace, and the unity of the country is not at stake. Thirdly, whatever problems there are, and there are problems, we agree, those problems are not so overwhelming that there are no solutions. There are solutions, and solutions are still being found.
Now, what do you say to those critics of the party who have the view that the CPDM is showing that it lacks ingenuity and creativity, and that the president is old and sometimes he's physically incapable, they say, to effectively administer the affairs of Cameroon?
Well, first of all, according to our own electoral laws and our own constitution, to be president in Cameroon, the minimum age is clear, and the president fulfills the minimum age. According to the constitution and our electoral laws, there is no maximum age. Therefore, talking about the age of the president is as if you are making a legal or constitutional case. There's no legal or constitutional case, and there is no political case either or electoral case as far as the president's age is concerned. And besides, as a matter of principle, age is, for us, is not a factor of management. On the contrary, as you know, in the African setting, age is a factor of maturity. Age is a factor of wisdom. Age is a factor of responsibility. And so for us, we think that age is not the issue. That is the mandate he has got. So there's no issue with that. Those who have issue with that are those who think that they have a right to take him out of office. Well, of course, it is their right because the constitution and electoral laws give every citizen a right to run for the office of president. But the fact that you have the interest or intention to run for the office of president does not give you a right to think that because of the age of another candidate, not to talk of the age of the incumbent, you think that you are right to send him away. No, you can't do that.
Some of the political parties are saying that the CPDM uses its political influence and government institutions to pretty much have an advantage of, and that the CPDM should, as a matter of fact, ensure that there's an equal playing field during the presidential election and subsequent elections. What's your response to that?
I think that that accusation has been heard before. It's not today. It's an old accusation, which is more than 30 years old. But the accusations they make are really without foundation, because they're looking at the fact that the president or the CPDM has the power and enjoys the power of incumbency. That is what you call incumbency. And because the incumbent party, the CPDM, is what is running the government and running the regime, they conclude or they accuse the CPDM that the power of the CPDM is based on the fact that they are running the regime or they are running the government. That's not the point.
Professor Elvis Ngule is the coordinator of academia for the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM. He spoke with me from the capital, Yaoundé, still in Cameroon. The main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF, has stepped up efforts to register supporters ahead of the coming general election. Richard Indifo, the SDF's Secretary for Political Education and Training, says the supporters of the party are responding positively to the ongoing voter registration. His remarks come as the Electoral Commission compiles a voter list to be used in the presidential election next year. Officials of the electoral body say the deadline for voter registration is on August 31st. For more on the registration drive, I reached Richard Indifo.
The SDF has been for quite some time now We have been focused on the registration of voters because for a long time there have been voter apathy, and most of those who do not go to the poll are those who are frustrated with the regime. They are frustrated with the current regime, and many of them feel like it is a deja vu, and that whatever they do, whether they vote or not, the result, the outcome is going to be the same. And so we have been taking time to meet the voters in the field, to explain to them why it's important for them to vote, and to let them know that massive registration and massive voting may actually turn the tide. And so that is what we have been doing. So with the deadline of the registration coming up on the 31st of August, we are doubling effort to ensure that as many voters as possible are registered in the electoral list.
What has been their responses since your mobilization drive?
Well, I would say that it has been positive. I think a lot of people are now realizing that just sitting home and complaining is not going to change anything. And so a lot of people have been responding positively to the call for voter registration. And so we have witnessed a good number of people, new voters, registering. For example, just recently in Kumba, we learned that they have registered within the last month 2,000 new voters. That is a very positive sign coming from that particular district, because in the past, it was very, very difficult to get people to go out and register.
I understand the chairman of the SDF is currently in Europe meeting with people in the diaspora. Does this form part of the engagement drive to get your supporters to register to vote?
Partly, because we now have the possibility of the Cameroonian diaspora to vote wherever they are. And so it is part of the drive, the mission of our national chairman to get our militants and other Cameroonians in the diaspora to enroll in the electoral list. But also, it is an important moment for the national chairman to engage with this Cameroonian diaspora and let them know the vision of the SDF as far as the future of Cameroon is concerned. So the national chairman actually wants to use this opportunity to engage with these Cameroonians and let them know what the SDF is proposing, at least sell the SDF platform to them, and also to mobilize them to vote for the SDF.
So we understand that the CPDM, the ruling party, has effectively endorsed incumbent President Paul Biya to run again for another term. What is your party's reaction to this?
Well, you see, Peter, this comes as no surprise, given President Biya's long tenure in power. However, it is disappointing to see the ruling party simply rubber stamp his candidacy rather than engage in a genuine democratic process to select their nominee. Well, as an opposition party, we believe the people of Cameroon deserve a real choice in the election, not just a continuation of the status quo. President Biya has been in power for over 40 years. And during that time, we have seen limited progress on key issues like the economy, like corruption, and currently the bigger problem, which is the Anglophone crisis that is going on. So I would say that my party will be putting forward our own candidate. It might not be our national chairman, because the constitution of our party says that we are going to have a primary. And so if there are other candidates who are interested, we are going to organize a primary, and we are going to select who is going to be our party flag bearer. However, I would say that we call on the CPDM to ensure a level playing field so that all parties can participate freely and fairly in the electoral process. Democracy requires competition of ideas, not simply an entrenched incumbent. So that is what we're looking up to.
Richard Indefor is the SDF Secretary for Political Education and Training. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Electoral Commission of Namibia is inviting both local and international poll observers to apply for accreditation to monitor the coming elections. Divert Mulauli, spokesperson of the electoral body, says all poll monitoring groups must meet specified benchmarks in order to meet requirements before the applications are approved. Officials say the closing date for the application is October 31st to allow the Electoral Commission enough time to investigate the background of an applicant. Namibians go to the polls on November 27th to elect a new president and National Assembly. Divert Mulauli, the spokesperson of the Electoral Commission of Namibia, tells me that his organization is on course with preparations to administer this year's polls.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia has invited observers, both locally and internationally, to observe the presidential and national assembly elections, which are scheduled to take place on the 27th of November 2024. The election process.
What are the key requirements that each and every poll observer, both local and international, would have to meet in order to qualify to be approved to monitor the elections?
Well, thank you. The requirements are, number one, you must be able to observe the elections process impartially. Number two, you must have extensive knowledge in electoral matters. Number three, you must have knowledge of the relevant legislations governing the elections in Namibia. Number four is you must have previously taken part in an observer mission and submit proof of such observer missions where you partaked. Number five, you must be able to observe the polling process in at least a number of constituencies. Namibia has 121 constituencies currently. Number six, you must abide by the code of conduct for election observers and able to observe the election process throughout using your own financial resources. So the commission will not cover for any costs. When it comes to the application procedures, applications can be downloaded on our website at www.ecn.na or can be requested via email at accreditation2024@ecn.na.
But I understand some poll observers have approached the Electoral Commission. What can you tell me about it?
Yes, some local and international observers have approached the commission just to assess the pre-election preparedness. One of that is the SADC observer mission was here to observe the pre-election preparations with regards to the commission.
For journalists, both local and international, who want to come and report on the elections, what do they have to do in order to be able to...
To observe and cover elections in Namibia, will be required to apply to the Electoral Commission of Namibia and will be required to attach proof of approval from the Ministry of Information and Communication Technology, which is the ministry responsible for communications in the country, to state that they have been given approval to conduct media activities in the country.
What has been the preparations ahead of the elections after you compile the voter list that will be used for the elections?
Actually, we are still in a process of compiling the provisional voters register. So what we are busy doing now is transferring the data, the registration data, onto our central server. Once that is completed, then we'll run that data through the automated fingerprint identification system to then segregate the data. After data segregation, then the provisional voters register will be available and published on the 29th of August 2024 for objections. And it's objections and then for people to view.
Is the Electoral Commission of Namibia on course in terms of your preparation calendar and activities to organize this year's elections?
That's correct. The Electoral Commission of Namibia is well on course in terms of execution of its electoral calendar as it was launched on the 7th of March 2024. Just need to touch base on the closing date.
Okay.
The closing date for application for observers is the 31st of October. This is to allow the Commission to have ample time to scrutinize these applications before the actual polling day or actual issuance of the accreditation.
David Mulauli is the spokesperson of the Electoral Commission of Namibia. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. Uganda's Minister of Tourism is calling for support for the Rwenzori Marathon taking place in Kasese on Saturday due to the enormous impact it has on the country's economy and international image. Amos Wakesa, the director of the Mount Rwenzori Marathon, says the 42-kilometer course competition is the only one in the world that crosses the equator. He adds that runners would also experience the beauty and majestic view of the Rwenzori Mountains. For more information about Saturday's marathon, I reach Amos Wakesa.
Uganda has not had a single marathon that is certified by World Athletics Federation. Uganda is one of the top three running nations in Africa, especially long distance. One other thing that has been very critical is that Ugandan-based runners don't necessarily come from a fairly to-do background, which means that many of them who are so talented could not afford to buy tickets or bus tickets to go to countries where marathons are for qualification actually taking place. What this marathon has done, after the certification by World Athletics Federation, it gives Ugandans a chance to qualify for any marathon in the world. Two oceans, that a lot of marathons across the continent.
What does this bring to Uganda as a whole, receiving the approval or certification?
One, it gives, first of all, confidence to the people that are going to run the same marathon. One of the reasons why in a third year we have just over 4,000 people coming from about 35 countries is quite a lot of them are actually also coming to qualify for races around the world. It is giving local Ugandans that are talented but could not go and access qualifications elsewhere a chance to be able to qualify. But in that, it also brings a lot of positivity on the country, because right now we have had at least 300,000 people collectively seeing positive things about Uganda because of the Rwenzori Marathon. Peter, almost 120,000 people come to watch these people. So the economic activities around that is shocking. And so also proving to people that actually
it boosts tourism and by extension, boosting the Ugandan economy.
Absolutely. It first of all puts focus on the country. Like, for example, many people would be listening to my interview with you, and I've been doing a lot of interviews across board. And I also know, if you Google my story, you'll find that I started out as a cleaner, became an office messenger, became a tour guide, started my first business with $200. I grew up in a children's home. And because I had the opportunity to understand the value of my country, I've been able to grow a lot of businesses. And I also know that people need opportunities. I was given opportunities. I started learning how to guide, learning how to bring tourists and take them around East Africa. And that's how my fortunes have changed. And I believe that this is going to spur opportunities for people across this country in many aspects, but also inspire marketing, because our leadership has not been taking marketing seriously, but now they're seeing that marketing over country and positioning the country brings instant results to a country. My expectation is that it is going to come with massive PR and branding for the country, like it is already doing, because people are coming from different parts of the world. So far, the interviews we've done, people are shocked about the friendliness of Ugandans, the greenness of the country, the quality of food, because we eat mainly organic food. I mean, I can tell you, Peter, you will never in your life eat a pineapple sweeter than a Ugandan pineapple. You never eat a juice avocado better than a Ugandan avocado. We get them from the garden. They're all organic. And this is changing the perspective. The great weather that we experience as a country. So all this is going to be showcased by those who are going to be running the Tuscarawas Wenzori Marathon, which is happening on the 24th of August, which is a Saturday this week.
What is your message to the people of Uganda and members of the international community who will be coming to Uganda for this marathon this Saturday?
First of all, it's going to be self-marathon. Number two is going to be extremely very scenic mountain, marathon at the same time. Just beyond being scenic, it is also going to spur economic growth. And I want Ugandans to see that a lot of them have been sleeping and not seeing these opportunities. I hope they will see the gaps for the next coming marathon. And I hope this inspires government of Uganda to invest money in branding and marketing of the country, and so that it can bring instant opportunities to the growing population. Peter, you should know that our population, 56% of our population is 18 years and below. And we're having 1 million Ugandans becoming 18 every single year. And these people need jobs. And there's nothing that brings as quick jobs as tourism does.
Amos Wakiza is the director of the Mount Rwenzori Marathon. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Africa's gaming industry is set to cross $1 billion in revenue this year. Rapid growth, driven by a young population, improved internet access, and more smartphones, has attracted major tech companies like Microsoft, Sony, and Disney to invest in the sector. VOA Mohammed Yusuf reports.
The video game market in Africa has shown promising growth, from $862 million in revenue in 2022 to a projected $1 billion in 2024, an 8.7% increase, according to the Newzoo Games Analytics company. Ebenezer Gasono, also known as Nomak, when playing games, has been playing online since the 1990s. He says there was a time game developers did not recognize African players.
First 10 years of, I will say, active video game in Africa was bad, bad. But like, for example, they have to sign up and they go like, oh, mention your country and here, I'm in Ghana. I go like, okay, I'm in Ghana. I go like, no, you don't support your country, so you have to play another game elsewhere. I think with the boom of the online system, and I think with the boom of Africa getting in on video games, you see that certain games are geared towards the world, but they now include Africa, and that's very nice to see.
An African game industry report says the number of gamers in sub-Saharan Africa has grown from 77 million in 2015 to 186 million in 2021. 95% of gamers play on their mobile phones, according to survey company Geopoll. For the majority, gaming is seen as a primary source of entertainment, relaxation and remedy for boredom, with 73% playing for fun and 64% for stress relief. African game developer Daniel Masharia of Kenya has been creating video games since 2015. Masharia developed Nairobi, an action-adventure game in which players navigate the city, encounter challenges inspired by real-life scenarios, and they explore iconic landmarks and hidden places in an exciting narrative that weaves local folklore and urban tales. He says the game also features running battles between police and protesters, which is a common scene in many African countries, including Kenya.
Some of the aspects of the game have, like, the two main characters who are young characters are college-going kids. And in the game, in some of the levels, they face off against officers of the law. So there was some kind of parallel serendipity that was happening there, where the game was starting to mirror real life. And that was just more validation that I chose to go the right way.
The gaming sector is attracting funding from Microsoft, Disney and Sony, raising millions of dollars to develop more games and scale game consumption across the continent. The chairman of the Pan-African Gaming Group, Jay Shapiro, says Africa attracts investments with its untapped storytelling potential.
Africa has a heritage of thousands of years of stories and legends that have never been heard in a lot of the world. And so this new interest is giving voice to a lot of creators across the continent to share those stories. And I think that's really powerful. And creating games where Africans can see themselves reflected in the game, which historically has never happened in the industry.
Adam Tawia, a Ghanaian game developer, says video games can help preserve African traditions.
And video games also offer a medium to preserve culture for the long term that can be packaged and distributed globally with just one click across app stores. And if we keep producing local content, this is going to create a lot of revenue for the African continent.
Recent investments, game camps and conferences in some African countries are helping to reduce the financial challenges faced by video game developers. The events support game development and education, making it easier for developers to create games and learn new skills. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Tu vende, anava ni kuba lava piko bunyama na patient has come, so that he go tell you his story. Your picking up Emma is small, my call can be on respect. Me and you no go able pay them for the one way and one way. So do your mind the words
and know what you for say.
Do your mind the action
and know what you for do.
Excuse me, madam. Waiting on your name.
Now, my name's Sunita.
Okay, I want for talk with you.
No problem.
Have you seen you they go up and down? Waiting on your mission. You go school.
Oh, yes, but really another far.
Waiting make you not continue. They call you young, so.
My long story, uncle. Really, I'm for thought.
I really want for no. Because myself can't get picky.
Now long story, uncle. It's a sorry, oh.
I like it long like monkey breed. Tell me you never know.
Me mama died the same day where you born me. Me love you, papa. Now you no more been to take care. They give me all kind of college because I've been there trying to school. You know we get much, but I know one is sleep hungry. Struggle for me, since I am good. Man can predict well, well.
The gun I get the final say.
No waiting, making no continue. Just let it so.
It's so sorry, oh good. No one for member.
Tell me soon it time, cause I really want for no.
Lost me daddy by the rebel war. Rebel they attack the village. I ain't their home. They want for kill me go me daddy tower. He say no. Because it tower, not before me, they be the torture. Waiting I be take it so take the broken teeth.
When them no say me daddy left me so much, now that's make their heart run.
Then give them the gun now. They say, well, you can be begin. Where daddy don't watch me. What a run, my guy. I know be a boss cry. For me loving papa. But you can I aid the command. Say, can you begin? We are seeing blood is splash. So God are nearly faint.
I tell daddy, say, kill me. If none, no more go save your life.
Daddy look me in the eye, shaking head and boss cry. Daddy hold the gun in hand, but to God in a fire. Daddy say Sunita, I no get mine for kill you. Make her die with this pain, once no more your life go on. They kill him before me, they say well you baby papa. Oh what a wicked people.
I've not ever seen a life.
Now this not my problem. But they can be up and down.
But now, make your soul rest in peace.
I don't say it painful. So later, do you have good time?
But now, I never get you kind of gain.
What no you reason? Why make it so?
But now, I never get you kind of gain.
Chavance
music. And a feel pain on me heart. It goes off your story. Have faith on it. And believe in the mighty God. But what do you go want for to now? For you living tomorrow.
I want for follow me education. College could be the best for me. I want for make sure for fulfilled. Me daddy and dream.
Daddy not there today, oh. Spirit there with me.
I don't get much on it, but I'm gonna try for a few. Instead of choose for clowning, I'm gonna try my level best. Let progress on it, and believe in the mighty God.
Papa, make your soul rest in peace.
I don't say it painful, so Nita, do ya all you can.
Papa, I never get you kind of game.
What no you reason? I make it so.
Papa, oh, oh, oh.
Ouagadou, Geneviève, la princesse de la Maraouine.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer Ndugu Said Hamdun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the foreigner has big eyes but cannot see much. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.